This is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from Glamorous Magazine's February 2011 edition. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The 10-second heart test everyone, every woman needs. You can take it yourself, even without getting out of bed, and it could save your life. There has never been a simpler way to see whether you're at risk for the number one killer of women. New research found that women with a resting heart rate higher than 90 beats per minute are 3 times more likely to die of heart disease than those with a resting heart rate below 60. How can your heart rate reveal so much? The fewer numbers of beats per minute, the stronger and more efficient your heart is, says Susan Steinbaum, director of the Women of Heart Disease in New York City. Here's how to find your resting heart rate. Grab a watch when you first wake up, before your feet touch the floor and your heart rate changes from its resting state. Then, with the index and middle finger on your hand, find your pulse on your wrist or neck and count how many beats occur in 10 seconds. Multiply that number by 6 to determine how many times your heart beats in 1 minute. If your number is 84 or higher, you need to take action to get your rate into a lower, healthier zone. Exercise. Cardio workouts such as jogging or swimming for 20 to 30 minutes at least 3 times a week are incredibly effective at lowering your resting heart rate. Stay at a healthy weight. The more excess weight you carry, the harder your heart has to pump. Getting to a healthy weight decreases the strain on the heart. Do anything that relieves stress. Since stress can make your heart rate spike, practice yoga or deep breathing, or just enjoy more downtime. If you smoke, quit. Smoking makes your heart rate climb. Once you quit, circulation and lung function improve, and you can reduce your heart disease risk by 50% in just 1 year. Health Answers Please, from Joanne Mason, MD. Here's the question. I rest my laptop on my stomach when I'm using it. Is that bad? Here's the answer. It's not smart. Laptops can get very hot, more than 100 degrees Fahrenheit. That's light bulb hot. While I haven't seen a case, I've read about toasted skin syndrome caused by contacts with hot laptops. It's a chronic low-grade burn and inflammation that can lead to permanent discoloration. Some experts fear it could raise the risk of skin cancer, but it'll be years before that data will be in. Well, can it affect my ovaries? The reader asks. Here's her answer. In men, a hot laptop can overheat the scrotum and cause fertility problems. But I doubt a laptop could transmit enough heat into a woman's body to harm her reproductive system. But why worry when it's so easy to avoid? Put some distance between you and that machine. There are no dumb diet questions. Confused about how to lose weight quickly and sanely? Welcome to month one of our 3-month Body by Glamour plan, a non-judgment zone where every woman's questions gets answered, by Sean Dresbach. You've had lots of experience with food, 3 meals a day, every day for several decades. You've probably been on a diet or 2 or 10. Shouldn't you be a pro at figuring out calories or what your ideal weight is? Unless the letters R and D come after your name, that's for registered dietitian, then we say no. So Glamour issued an invitation. Send us your nutrition and diet questions, anything and everything, and we'll give you useful once and for all answers. First question, how much weight can I lose in a healthy way in 6 weeks? answer. I love that you say a healthy way, because that's the key, said Donald Hensrud, M.D., and professor at Mayo Clinic in New York. I'm sorry, in Rochester, Minnesota. You could just eat jelly beans and drop weight, but that wouldn't be good for you. Generally, the recommendation is to lose no more than an average of 2 pounds per week, or 12 pounds in 6 weeks. To drop more than that, you probably have to resort to some kind of extreme, unsustainable diet. The only exception, if you're overweight, it is possible to lose more and do it healthfully. No matter what your size, weight rarely comes off in the same way for everyone. Some weeks the scale might not change at all, and then suddenly you drop 4 pounds. That's the way weight loss works. How do I know how much I need to maintain or lose weight? As a rule, it's to take your current body weight and multiply it by 13. If you're moderately active, that's about how many calories a day you need to stay where you are. To lose weight, shave off a few hundred calories from what you eat every day or burn it off with exercise. To gain weight, simply add a few hundred calories daily with healthy foods like apples and peanuts. Is it possible to eat healthy without lots of vegetables? I am not a fan. Sorry, no. They're crucial. Vegetables contain antioxidants and other good-for-you compounds that you simply cannot get from other foods, even fruits or a multivitamin. Variety is important, too. One study found that women who ate the same amount of vegetables, those who consumed 18 different kinds, had far better disease and anti-aging protection than those who did not. But there is hope for you. I've seen many people develop a genuine taste for veggies. Start by topping your pizza with broccoli. Add carrots and spinach to chicken noodle soup. Gradually increase your veggies from here and there to having 3 servings a day, and choose the most nutritious fruits possible. Generally, they are blueberries, grapes, pomegranates, and cranberries. Next question. I struggled with an eating disorder for years. Is it possible I may have done permanent damage to my metabolism? Women recovering from bulimia or anorexia do tend to have slower metabolisms than normal eaters. But once you adopt healthier habits and your body gets the message that it no longer has to cling to every calorie for life, your metabolism should return to normal, even if you struggled with an eating disorder for years. When your body trusts that you're not going to starve it, your metabolism will bounce back. What's the difference between a carb and a calorie? The low-carb craze has led us to a lot of confusion. Here's the deal. All foods are made up of carbohydrates, fat, protein, or alcohol. All the calories and how many calories you eat determines if your weight will go up and down. Fat and alcohol have more calories per gram than carbs or protein. A low-calorie diet can be high in carbs, and a low-carb diet can be very high in calories. So you could gain weight on that one. Strive to keep calories under control, with carbs making up half your daily intake. I'm confused by fat. What's good? What's bad? Remember the plant-animal rule. Fats that come from plants, such as olive oil, are healthy. They're called monounsaturated fats and can lower heart disease. Animal fats are the saturated kind and can harm your heart. They tend to be hard at room temperature, she explains. Imagine your arteries are straws. Now think about olive oil passing through them compared to butter or bacon grease. You can see how your arteries get clogged. One exception to this rule, omega-3. Found in fish, such as salmon, is excellent for you. And there are man-made fats called trans fats, and they are the worst. If you see hydrogenated on any ingredients, steer clear. Last question. I've read you shouldn't go below 1,200 calories a day, but if I eat more, I gain weight. Is it because of the fat content? Actually, no. There's little correlation between dietary fat content and weight. It all comes down to calories. That said, you're right that you shouldn't eat less than 1,200 calories a day. If you find you're gaining it that level, don't respond by starving yourself. The word you need is exercise. The bullying stops here. 1 year ago, this January, high school student Phoebe Prince took her own life after being tormented by her peers. Haunted by Phoebe's death, young adult authors Megan, Kelly Hall, and Carrie Jones are taking action to prevent more teen tragedies. This article is by Sheila Wheeler. Megan Kelly Hall, 37, knows all about mean girls. As author of young adult novels like Sisters of Misery, she's created teen villains based on the bullies from her own school days. I tried to make up my characters as over-the-top evil as best as I could, she says. And then last year, Hall read about the suicide of Phoebe Prince, the 15-year-old in South Hadley, Massachusetts, who had been taunted relentlessly as a slut by classmates. Some kids had even gone online to suggest that she kill herself. Hall, a Massachusetts resident, was stunned. "These teens topped what I could have written about my characters," she said. Almost 300 miles away in Maine, another young adult writer was having similar reactions to Prince's death. Carrie Jones, age 38, author of the best-selling Need series, had, as a child, virtually stopped talking because a speech impediment made her the target of teasing. "For any kid to die because they feel hopeless and alone," said Jones, "that was the worst thing I could think of." Jones and Hall were discussing the tragedy by email when Hall had a bright idea. "We have a platform," she wrote, referring to the fact that millions of girls and women read their books. "We must do something about bullying," replied Jones. "If we can stop one bully, save just one life, it's worth it." Their efforts to reach teens, especially girls, could have profound rippling effects. In one study, 42% of kids said they'd been bullied online, and more than half admit that they had said mean things about others online. Most alarmingly, a separate study found that bullied girls are more likely to become suicidal than bullied boys. Hall and Jones' organization, Young Adult Authors Against Bullying, now provides anti-bullying strategies for thousands of teens and adults using Facebook. The pair also recruited other young adult authors to speak about this issue. The resulting anthology, Dear Bully, is due out in September. Consider it the soulmate of the It Gets Better project, launched to support gay teens after last fall's suicide of tormented Rutgers freshman Tyler. In the book, 65 authors, including Megan McCafferty and R.L. Stein, tell how they survived cruelty at school. "These are real Cinderella stories," said Jones, "people who were trounced by their peers but battled back." She and Hall will donate part of the book sales to stompoutbullying.org, and many of the authors in the anthology will be speaking to kids in classrooms. "That kind of one-on-one contact is crucial," says Jones. Jones found when a girl confessed to suicide thoughts on her website, the author got her counseling. "It's mind-blowing," she says, "to think there are all these kids that we can help just by sharing our own stories." The next article, I Drove Drunk and Killed Two Sisters. After a day of partying, Brandy Graff got behind the wheel and slammed into an oncoming car. Since then, she's crusaded against the trend of women driving drunk. But should she ever be forgiven? By Bethany Vaccaro. Randy Graff can't remember the moment that changed her life. She does remember enjoying a gorgeous day at the beach, heading to a party at some college guy's house, drinking another beer, and waking up in a hospital room with a man in scrubs gripping her shoulders. She started yelling and fighting to get free when his voice cut through her confusion. "You've killed someone!" Graff passed out again, her last brief reprieve before the harsh reality of the rest of her life hit her. Wednesday, April 20th, 2005, was forecasted to be in the 80s, sunny and seasonably warm for early spring in Rhode Island. A little after 9 a.m., 18-year-old Graff jumped in her stepfather's Mazda and went to Narragansett Beach with a girlfriend and a 24-pack of Budweiser. We drank in the way on the car on the way to the beach and for the next several hours. There was nothing out of the ordinary for her. I love to party. I'd go to a house party and play beer bong and card games or go dancing at clubs with my fake ID. On the way home from the beach, she says, she and her friend decided to hit a college kegger before meeting up with Graf's boyfriend of 6 months. It was 3:30 p.m., and the two girls had already finished a case of beer. A few towns away, Dora, 95, and her sister, Vicky, 86, had spent the afternoon dancing at the local seniors club. Afterwards, Dora's daughter, Karen, suggested they all go out for chowder and clam cakes, and the sisters were thrilled. They were busy, knitting hats for the homeless, volunteering at nursing homes, spending time with their grandchildren. They could often be seen cruising around town in the grandnephew's Mustang convertible, with their white hair blowing in the wind. They were always happy. After an early dinner, the sisters piled into the car for a scenic drive along the waterfront. Sometime before 6:30 p.m., Graf and her friend left their party. Graf can't recall if they discussed whether she should be getting behind the wheel. I don't remember driving erratically, she admits. But Dora's daughter does. I saw a gold flash, she says, looking down as she replays the scene in her mind. All of a sudden, boom, it was like a slow-motion movie. Graf careened left on the two-lane road, slamming head-on into the car. The first sister hurt her head, slamming it, and her ankle, and broken her ribs. But Victoria died at the scene. Theodora died 3 days later due to those same injuries. The sisters were among the nearly 16,000 people killed that year in alcohol-related crashes. And although that figure has declined, the number of women driving drunk has gone up. FBI statistics show that since 2005, DUI arrest of young women jumped 36%. One reason for the spike is that groups like MAD have successfully pushed for better enforcement of laws. But another major contributing factor is that women are drinking more. The statistics, while startling, reflect the well-documented trend of women overindulging. According to one study, 37% of college women binge drink. Jersey Shore, Snooki, and Angelina chug until they fall over. And multiple offender Lindsay Lohan is more punchline than cautionary tale, printing for cameras, wearing only a bikini and her sobriety moniker. Women are working harder and partying harder and often driving home afterwards, sending a message that drinking and driving is tolerated. It's even expected. It was so easy for Brandy, she got beer from adults. We need to start respecting the fact that alcohol is a drug and it can cause harm. The day after the accident, when Graf came to in the hospital, she was handcuffed to her bed, her worst injury, a gash on the knee. Her friend, whose name was never released because she was 16 at the time, suffered minor wounds. Graf was arraigned in her hospital room on multiple felonies, including reckless driving, resulting in a death. Authorities took her to the state correctional facility where she was fingerprinted, photographed, and held for a few hours until her parents posted bail. I just couldn't wrap my mind around what happened, she said. How could things go so wrong? Was I really responsible for ending human life? Could I kill someone and not even know it? Graf spent the next 2 years out on bail, awaiting her sentencing through a plea bargain. She forced herself to go to community college classes and attended outpatient drug and alcohol treatment. I don't want to go out in public, she says. I was so ashamed. I felt like prison was where I belonged. Watching the news coverage of her case, she saw for the first time the faces of the women she killed. They were smiling and they were happy. They looked like people I would know. They looked like my grandma. Graf believed that she should have been the one killed. There are times I just wanted to die. When you do something like that, like what I've done, you have to figure out how to fix it, how to make up for it. But there was no solution. In June of 2007, a month before her 21st birthday, Graf was sentenced to 15 years with at least 10 to serve at the adult correctional institution in Rhode Island. Superior Court Judge Stephen Nugent said, "Hopefully the word will go out. You drink, you drive, you hurt or kill someone, you will be punished." Graff was led out of the courtroom by two officers. She was now inmate number 128457. Now, Graff's typical morning starts with a cup of instant coffee in the cell she shares with another woman. She spends her day scrubbing toilets, lugging trash, and mowing the lawns. The friends who used to be central in her life don't write her visit, but she does see her boyfriend and her stepdad. Her mom brings takeout three times a week, which they eat with plastic forks under the watchful gaze of guards. "Drive safe," Graff says to her mother before she leaves. A year into her sentence, Graff begins speaking to a group of high schoolers about drinking and driving. Once a week during the school year, she'll tell her story, often breaking down into tears. But she says these talks have given her a reason for living. She wants to show the students that they could have just as easily been in her shoes. "Never in a million years did I think I would be in jail. People don't like me go to jail. I wasn't a criminal," she tells them. "You don't want to be me. I'm now Brandy, drunk driver. I'm now Brandy, killer." She received letters from students who said that hearing her story helped them make better choices. "But it can't undo the terrible thing I've done," she says. "It will never be okay." While other members of the victims' families have not contacted Graff, Bucci and her daughter Melissa have visited her in prison, once when a student group came to hear Graff speak, and once during regular visiting hours. "I have a broken heart that's never going to mend," Bucci says, "but I did want hatred on top of that." Bucci approached Graff before she was to speak, and seeing that she was nervous, hugged her and whispered, "What I want you to do for me is to get up there and speak so strong that these kids will understand that this can't continue." Later in a letter, she told Graff to be a good person, and if it gets hard, you ask my mother and aunt to help you, and they will. Graff was stunned by their compassion. "I couldn't understand why she was being nice to me. You say sorry to someone, but it seems stupid coming out of your mouth, because sorry doesn't scratch the surface. I used to hope I could make it up to them, that if I kept talking to kids and doing good, I could make them feel better. But I've ruined their lives." Should Graff be forgiven? She was only 18 when she drove drunk, an age when many of us make foolish choices. But she didn't have a beer or two. She drank until she blacked out and then got behind the wheel. "She was old enough to reason," says Abbott of MAD, "and I'll bet she knew what she was doing was wrong. So she goes through the justice system, and we hope that she will be rehabilitated." Some people believe that making an example of someone like Graff will scare others straight. But Hugh Gutterson, Ph.D. at George Mason University, who has studied underage drinking, says that to come down hard on Graff is to ignore our collective culpability. Brandy Graff was enabled by adults who provided the alcohol and was incited by peers who'd considered it cool to drink to excess, then drive, he says. She made her choice in a society that glorifies drinking. What we should be focusing on, he says, is prevention. For every Graff, there are countless young women who slid behind the wheel after a few cosmos and barely make it home. Sending one or even a dozen Brandy Graffs to prison won't change that. The most important question is, what will stop this from happening? Why do young adults think drinking is the most exciting thing? If Graff serves all 10 years, she will leave prison at 31, although she's likely to get out sooner for good behavior. Last October, she was eligible for her first chance at parole. She prepared a packet for the board, hoping that a woman who had made a terrible mistake as a teenager might be given a second chance. But Bucci, for all her forgiveness, did not support Graff's release. 3 years is not enough for killing two people. My mom and my aunt were worth more than that, she told the parole board. Bucci still suffers from breathing problems and a limp and often sees the flash of the crash in her eyes. She remembers her aunt struggling for the last breath. The hearing didn't last very long. Parole was denied. Graff will be eligible again in 2 years. A shocking trend: women driving drunk. Arrest of women for driving under the influence has jumped 36% since 2005, when the legal blood alcohol content limit dropped from 0.1 to 0.08. But the spike has less to do with tougher standards than more to do with the fact that women are simply drinking more. More women are working, they're under pressure, and they're going to happy hour. Maybe you haven't eaten enough that day, or you're tired. Depending on your size and constitution, if you have one glass of wine, you could be impaired. It couldn't be simpler. Don't drink and drive. Save Me Money, Questions and Answers by Carmen Ulrich. When I was 19, I thought bills would just go away if I didn't pay them. At 26, bad credit is keeping me from buying a house. How do I begin to clean up? The answer? Spread all of your bills out in front of you, telling yourself, I'm an accountant. Start putting as much as you can afford toward paying off the card with the highest interest rate, and make the minimum monthly payment on time to the rest of your accounts. Negotiate a lower APR if you can, and notice that settlements, where a card lets you pay a lower lump sum now instead of chipping away at the full amount you owe, will hit your credit rating hard, and you may be taxed on the difference. If these steps don't work for you, talk to a credit counselor at nfcc.org. It may take 2 or 3 years, but you can get back on track. Next question. I got a debit card to avoid debt, but I keep incurring overdraft fees. Help! Debit cards can be wise, but only if you keep track of your balance. The easy fix? Sign up for bank alerts for when you're getting close to your cushion. If that fails, it's time for major rehab. Use money management software and watch every penny that's going in and out. Next question. I pick up the tab when I'm with friends, when we're out at restaurants, even if I know I can't afford it. This is a common gesture. It's a gesture that says, I want approval and love. You can avoid causing yourself money problems by bringing cash to the dinner, but only enough for your part of the bill. Eventually, you'll see that people connect with you because of you, not for what you can do for them, or for what you're buying them. I pay my phone bill late, and then when they threaten to turn it off, I go shopping. What does this mean? It means you're playing a game. You're trying to figure out how you can play and pay. You're shopping emotionally. You need to find another alternative. Pay your bills on time, and then you can go shopping. Money quickie, another reason not to eat like a guy. Men spend $1,900 a year eating out. Women only $1,200 a year. Remembering Elizabeth Edwards. Life is rarely what we expect it to be, Elizabeth Edwards told Glamour magazine when she was honored as 2007 Women of the Year. Glamour magazine would like to acknowledge her passing on December 7th. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of From Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.